Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
So I am back and forth all these years. One day, I'm super sad. The next day, I'm super mad. The next day, I don't know, is my son alive? I don't think he is, but maybe he could be. Maybe the police are right. And I have half the town saying that he's alive and my close friends saying, I'm not sure. And then I have other really, really close friends saying, Monica, you know him. He would not do this to you. You know, I'm bouncing back and forth all over the place like a tennis ball. It's like, am I mad at him? Am I supposed to be mourning him? How am I supposed to be acting here? How do I deal with this? And it was just every day I just put my feet on the floor and said, I've got to look for him. I've got to do something. I've got to do something to help this investigation along because nobody else seems to want to help me.
On September 30th, 2011, 18-year-old Nico Lisi went missing. Nico was last seen in Addison, New York, with his friend, Robert Knight. It has been reported that Nico and Robert went to Nico's uncle's house around 2 p.m. that afternoon. Nico told his uncle that he and his friend were heading to Buffalo, New York, to go camping. The pair were driving a pickup truck that they claimed belonged to Robert's grandfather. But this would later be proven to be untrue. The following day, on October 1st, Nico spoke to one of his family members via telephone. Little did they realize that this would be the last time they would speak with him. A few days later, on October 3rd, Nico's mother Monica got a letter in the mail that contained Nico's driver's license. According to the note attached to the license, it had been found in Hornell, New York, which is about a 20-minute drive from where Nico and his family lived. Nico's family was already concerned given the fact that they had not heard from him for a few days. Receiving his driver's license in the mail sent them into a panic. Nico Lisi was reported missing on October 5th, 2011. It was later found out that the friend that Nico had been with around the time that he went missing had allegedly been dropped off in Romulus, Michigan on October 1st by Nico. But no one witnessed this drop-off to confirm that Nico was there. Once police started looking deeper into this case, it was discovered that Nico's last cell phone ping hit a tower in Franklin, Tennessee. He may have been spotted in that area, but there's no concrete evidence proving that it was actually him. On October 8th, Nico's friend Robert Knight was questioned by police in Michigan in regards to Nico's whereabouts. Police took Knight to the hospital to get a psychiatric evaluation due to the behavior he was exhibiting. However, he was released the following day. But then, on October 10th, only 2 days after being questioned by police, Robert Knight was found dead of an apparent drug overdose. This is just one of the many mysterious circumstances surrounding the disappearance of Nico Lisi. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 179 of The Vanished, Nico Lisi's story.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. For this episode, we had the opportunity to speak with Nico's mother, Monica. Before we get into the many twists and turns regarding Nico's disappearance, I'd like to share a little bit more about who he was. Here's Monica speaking about her children and their family life.
Oh, my kids were into every sport imaginable. They were very close in age. My boys were 13 and a half months apart. They were like twins. And then 2 years later, I had my daughter. They were very, very close, just always into something. My life was chaotic. Sometimes it was like they were swinging on the grapes, and I was just looking around and smiling. I mean, they were into wrestling and baseball and soccer and hockey and football. And my daughter played whatever her brothers did. And back then, I mean, there was no Facebook or anything like that. And we could travel 50 miles away to a soccer tournament and people were running up and the Lisi kids are here and always doing something. And they were hellions, but they were good kids. I had my hands full because a lot of that time I was a single mom. But I mean, their dad took part and coached, you know, football for them, and he coached Little League, and I coached soccer, and, you know, we tried to be amicable as we could as the kids were growing up. And my ex-husband got remarried, and he had had the wife after me, and she was great. She loved my kids, and I was the divorcee that was like, the more people that love my kids, the better. It was like, I don't want to fight with anybody. You know, we went our separate ways. That's great. That's fine. And let's do what we can do for the kids. I'm not going to say it was always that way. I mean, my ex-husband didn't like me and I didn't like him for a reason. But, you know, the kids were always number one importance to both of us. There was just so many things that we did and the kids were involved in. And even through high school, it was the same thing. When they got in high school, they played every sport imaginable. And then it was, you know, weeknights, weekends, all the time, right through high school. And, you know, as they got older, the boys got a little more independent. And Nico was the odd ball out of the three. And I hate to put it that way, but he really was. Nico was just very demanding. I don't know how to put it. It's not that he was a terrible, terrible person, where my oldest son was just always laid back and, you know, everything's good. And Nico, there always had to be something going on. It's like a girl with drama. It's like, there's always got to be something happening and it's never going to be good. Nico had this thing about him where I can remember one time in school, it really stuck out, and parents had called me about it. There was a boy in his gym class that was handicapped. And they had to pick teams for something that they were doing in gym class. And Nico would pick this kid to be on his team all the time. And I remember telling him, you know, how proud I was of him for doing that. And he said, well, Mom, I always felt like nobody was going to pick him to be on their team. And I was going to pick him. He was going to be on my team. So he kind of always looked out for the underdog. But when somebody would try to be his match or be as tough as he was or as mouthy or cocky as he was, Nico was going to show them, I'm a little cockier than you. I'm a little louder than you. I'm a whole lot stronger than you. But he looked out for the underdog. So there was that part of him that he had the loving side. And I mean, he was a kid that would get out of the car with me at the mall and at 17, 18 years old and grab my hand and hang on my hand. My kids were all very loving. We just always had a close relationship. Yeah, there were times they got in trouble. There was stuff that they all did that, you know, I'd fly off the handle and you're in trouble and you're not going to the dance and you're staying home. And so it was kind of a normal, I guess, normal upbringing. for three kids and their mom. I got remarried when they were entering seventh and eighth grade, and we moved to a new town, went to a different school. So their high school years were in Jasper. Coming into a marriage where my husband did not have kids, so he's taking on three teenager and a preteen kid. And so it was pretty hectic. But, I mean, we all loved each other. They didn't like rules. Not every kid did. I didn't when I was young. I'd tell my parents I was going somewhere and I'd end up somewhere else. And I imagine that my kids probably did the same. But I always kind of felt that I was pretty well in the loop of where they were, what they were doing, who they were hanging with. And, you know, later in life you find out, oh, well, Mom, did you know that I snuck out of the house when I was a junior in high school? No, I didn't know that. And I don't need to know that. But, you know, so Nico was at that age. He was 18. And he was supposed to be at my mom's cabin. And the next thing I know, he's hanging out and disappearing out of my life forever with Robbie Knight. So, you know, a typical household, maybe. I don't know. Maybe households don't run like that. But, I mean, we had our ups and downs, as a family always does. And there were arguments and lots of laughs and lots of wrestling in my living room and lots of races and spelling tests and, you know, homework to be done. And it was just a normal childhood for them, as normal as I could make it without their father and I being together. But their father did the same.
Nico was no stranger to trouble by the time he was 18 years old. We should note that he was diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder when he was 15 years old. This disorder commonly exhibits symptoms of irritability, anger, and argumentative behavior, particularly when a person of authority is involved. At some point, Nico went to live in Tennessee with relatives. He needed a change of scenery, and so he spent a year away from home. However, he landed himself in a bit of trouble when he didn't come home in time for curfew.
He didn't come home for curfew, and my sister-in-law called me, and she said, Nico was not home, and we have given him, you know, 2 hours, and he's not here. I don't know what we should do. Should we call the police? And I said, yes, call the police. And so they called the police. The police came out, took a report. Nico didn't come home all night. They couldn't get a hold of him. He didn't show up for school the next day. My sister-in-law took off work, went around looking for him at friends' houses and found him at this young man's house. And there were a few other kids there, I guess, and they were all skipping school and they were all in the hot tub. And my sister-in-law called the police and told them that she knew where he was. So she went to the house, went up and said, Nico, get out of the hot tub. You need to get dressed. And so he did. And he's like, oh, you always got to ruin a good party, you know. And so she gets him out to the car and she said, when we drive down out of here, the Franklin police are waiting for you and you're going to get out of this car and you're going to go over to them and they are going to be taking you down to the police station. And he's like, well, why? And she said, because in Tennessee, you can't just not come home and you can't just not go to school without consequences. So she said, there's not going to be an incident down here. You're going to get out of this car and you're going to go with them, cooperate with them. So he got out of the car. He went with the police officers and they took him to juvenile hall. And I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, he was at juvenile hall for about a week, maybe 3 days, 4 days. Anyway, he had to stay there. There was no my sister-in-law and brother-in-law going to get him out or anything. He had to stay there. The longer he stayed there, the madder he got. And when he got out, my sister-in-law had arranged for him to go to a psychiatrist about anger issues and things like that. I mean, when he first went there, he took this course and he became a lifeguard at the complex where my sister-in-law lives. And I mean, he had friends and, you know, was doing well. And then he gets caught skipping school. He goes to juvenile hall. He comes out. Now, this is your consequence and you're going to see this psychiatrist. I think you have some things that maybe you need to talk about. And I think that right then it was pretty much downhill from there. Even when he came back to New York, he showed up at the airport and called me and said, I came home. And I thought he was in school in Franklin, Tennessee. And here he was in Rochester, New York, flying in on a plane.
When Nico returned home to New York, it wouldn't be long before he wound up in trouble again. He was arrested on a robbery charge after throwing rocks at a convenience store window, which ultimately broke.
He got arrested, and it was a robbery charge. I was like, you know, what do you mean a robbery charge? Isn't that like destruction of property or whatever? Well, they had broken the window of the store. And I don't even know if the other boys got charged. I don't even know what the whole story was with them. I was just concerned about my kid. Well, he ended up going to court, and he ended up in front of the judge, and I'm sitting there, and they're going to decide what's going to happen to him. And he's 17 years old. The judge says something, and the attorney says something, and Nico stands there, and Nico says, no, I'm not saying that. That's not what I did. That's not what I did. I'm not agreeing to that. That's not what I did. And the attorney's talking to him, and they're kind of whispering, and I can't hear it. And Nico, again, like having an outburst, he's like, no, I'm not agreeing to that. That's not what I did. I didn't rob anything. I'm not going to plead guilty to robbery. And the attorney asks the judge, can I have a minute with my client? They start talking back and forth, and they stand up. I don't even know exactly what the agreement was or the plea was. The end result was the court offered Nico 5 years probation. Nico said, I don't want to, I'm not taking 5 years probation. The attorney is discussing, you know, what's going to happen. He ended up going to Stemmen County Jail for 8 months. And that's what a county year is. So you do 8 months on a county year. And I'm like, he cannot go to jail. I said, you can't let him do that. You cannot let this kid go to jail. He's starting his senior year in high school. And the attorney looked at me and he said, you know what, Monica? He's hanging out with the wrong people. He's just going to end up getting in more trouble. He can't stay out of trouble for 5 years. You and I both know it. So let him do his county year. He'll have to get a GED while he's incarcerated. He can't tell him no. He has to do it. It's a requirement. So he'll get his GED while he's in there. Because you and I both know, if he walked out of here on 5 years probation and he went back to school, he'd be in trouble in the first couple of weeks. He wouldn't ever graduate from high school. So let's get him away from his friends. Let him go to jail. So for 8 months, every Friday night, I would go visit my kid. So I know all about the feeling of what it's like to be able to go see your kids. So he did that. And when he got out, he was out for, got out in May, and this was all 2011. In August, we are at a county fair. His phone rings. He's with me, his two-year-old sister, and his stepfather. His phone rings, and he walks away from me, and he comes back, and he says, Mom, we got to go. And I said, what do you mean we got to go? And he said, I have to go to the police station. And I said, what do you need to go to the police station for? He said, because they want to talk to me about a fight. I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm yelling at him. And we get in that car and I just unleashed on him.
When Nico got to the police station, he asked to go in alone. He told his mom that he would call her and let her know what was going on. And Monica agreed to let him handle it on his own. She was angry with him and frustrated, but had no idea the bombshell that Nico was about to drop on her. Nico was being charged with statutory rape. He was 18 years old and had sexual relations with a 14-year-old. The relationship had started when he was a minor himself and continued after he turned 18. While the acts were consensual, due to her age, legally she couldn't consent. Nico was not the only young man charged with statutory rape in this case. It appears that this teen was having sexual relationships with multiple people and they were all charged with rape and/or endangering the welfare of a minor, depending on their age. It was a horrible situation that Nico was extremely distraught over. Being 18 years old, he was handed the heftiest charge, and he feared that he was going to have to live the rest of his life with the label of rapist attached to it. Nico appeared in court, and he was prepared to fight the charge. But Nico would never get that chance, because soon thereafter, Nico Lisi was missing.
My son Nico disappeared from our hometown on September 30th, 2011. It was a Friday night that I received a phone call from my brother, and he had asked me if I knew where Nico was. And I said no, that I hadn't heard from him that day, that I had talked to him on Thursday, but he was at my mom's cabin as far as I knew. And my brother told me that Nico had been to his house that afternoon with an acquaintance named Robbie Knight. And he said that Nico had been there and told him that they were going camping in Buffalo. And he was a little concerned about that and wanted to make sure that I knew it. And I said, no, I don't know anything about that. And I didn't realize that Nico was even hanging out with Robbie Knight, because when they were in school, they didn't even like each other. So it was kind of odd to me that they were together. And I got off the phone with my brother. I don't know. I had texted Nico and I said, where are you? What are you doing? Who are you with? That type of thing. And I didn't get anything back. And I text again and I said, I know you were at the house today because your sneakers are gone out of your room. And I said, what else did you take? And I got a reply back from him that said, clothes, duh. And this was like around 11 o'clock at night on a Friday night. I believe I tried to call him after that and he wouldn't answer the phone. And I chalked it up to, you know, he's 18 years old. He's probably up to no good. And I'm just going to have to figure this out in the morning. And I went to bed. And I got up the next morning and I went to work. The first customers of the day came into my shop. This woman was talking to my sister, because my sister worked with me at that time and we do hair. This woman was talking to my sister and said, hey, did you guys hear about that stolen truck from town? And I said, no. I said, what are you talking about? She said, oh, it was in the paper. I said, do you have it? And she said, well, no. And she said to her husband, she said, oh, can you go out and get the paper for Monica? So he went out and got the paper. And he came back in, and I stood there, and I'm reading this article about this stolen vehicle from a street over from where my shop is. I was just like, oh, my God. And I was just sick. I took the phone, and I went out back, and I called my brother, and I said, what kind of vehicle were those boys in yesterday when they were at your house? And he said, they were in a truck. And I said, well, whose truck was it? And he said that they said it was Robbie's grandfather's truck. And I said, what did it look like? And he started describing the color, make and model of this truck. And I was just ill. I knew that my son had something to do with it. I called my husband and I was flipping out on him. And I'm like, I need the number to Robbie's grandparents. And he's like, what is going on? And what are you talking about? I said, those boys have something to do with the stolen truck. I know they do. They were at my brother's yesterday in this truck, and I can't get a hold of Nico. He's not answering his phone. And I don't even believe that my husband at that point knew that I had texted Nico Friday night. So he was just like, Monica, you need to calm down, and this is crazy, and you don't know any of this to be, you know, for sure, and you need to collect yourself. So eventually he gave me the number. I called Robbie's grandparents. I talked to Robbie's grandmother. And I asked if Robbie was there. She said no. She said that she had taken Robbie to meet Nico a week prior to some cabin. And so then I'm figuring out Robbie's been with Nico this last week up at my mom's. Why hasn't my mom said anything to me? Well, after we all figure this out, my mom didn't know that Robbie was with Nico, and Nico had been at my sister's house that week. He had had dinner with us that Tuesday night before he left. I had talked to him on the phone on Thursday. There was never any mention of Robbie. Nobody knew that Robbie was at my mom's cabin. I asked Robbie's grandmother, I said, well, do they have your truck? And she said, no, we don't have a truck. And I just came unraveled, and I knew. So I said, you know, we need to get a hold of Robbie. Where is Robbie? And she said, well, I don't know. He said he was going back to Michigan to his dad, and he was going to give us our life back, and he wanted to, you know, get things straight in his life. And I'm like, listen, lady, give me the number. Something is wrong here. These boys are in trouble. there is a stolen truck from Addison that I'm reading about in the paper. I want the number to your son's house out in Michigan. And she didn't want to give it to me. I ended up getting off the phone with her at some point. I came home from work, and we had company in town that weekend that were staying at my house, and we had dinner plans that night, and I was a basket case. And my husband took me aside, and he said, "You need to calm down. We don't need to let our friends know that you're going crazy here." And I'm like, "I'm telling you, something is not right." So I'm on the phone with my brother, my sister. My kids were on their phones. My ex-husband was on his phone. Everybody's calling Nico's phone and blowing his phone up, and he's not answering anybody. So we had went to dinner, and I can remember sitting in that restaurant, and my phone rang, and it was a little bit after 5 o'clock, and it was my mom. And she said, "I just called Nico's phone, and I think it was him." And he picked up and said, "I can't talk right now. I'll call you back." And she said he hung up. So I'm sitting there at the dinner table, and I called my ex-husband. I called my son. I called my daughter. I called my brother, my sister. I said, "Everybody, you guys need to call his phone. You need to call his phone. He answered the phone when mom called. You have to call him." So we're all frantically texting and calling him just nonstop. And that night when I got home, I had called the police department and told them of my suspicions.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Monica got in touch with the police and outrightly told them that she believed that her son was possibly involved with the car theft. After communicating that to the police and with no answer from Nico, Monica did the next best thing. She began contacting Robert Knight's family members.
Between 7 and 8 o'clock Saturday night on the 1st, I call Robbie's grandmother again. I said, "I want to know what is going on." Well, Robbie arrived in Michigan. His dad found him there this morning, and he's a little upset because he didn't know Robbie was coming. And we just want you to know that Nico robbed him at gunpoint and stole his cell phone and a bag of clothes. And I said, "Well, who saw Nico? Did anybody call the police? Did you call the police on him?" "Well, no, they didn't want to do that." And I am just again, I am out of my mind going crazy, and I'm yelling at this woman. And I'm like, these kids are in trouble. Something is going on. My kid isn't answering his phone. I don't know if they're into drugs. I don't know what the hell is happening, but you people need to give me Robbie's phone number and give me the cell phone number. I want to call the cell phone. She says, well, we were thinking about, you know, having it shut off since Nico stole it. And I said, don't shut it off. I said, please just leave it on because he's not answering his own phone. And if he stole Robbie's phone and has it, maybe he'll answer it. So she ends up giving me this cell phone number. And I call the cell phone number and it's already disconnected. They had already turned the phone off. So I call her back. I'm arguing with her and she's not seeing it. She knows where her grandson is. So of course she's not worried. And I'm like, you know, who saw him? You know, did your son see him? What are they saying? Where did he go? Well, we don't know. He robbed Robbie and he drove away. So nobody in Michigan ever saw Nico.
Monica and her family were already concerned about what was going on with Nico. What happened next would cause a panic.
Monday comes and I had come home from work. I went to the mailbox and there's a letter in there addressed to Nico. And I opened it up and it was his driver's license and it had a note attached to it. Found this on the ground at the Hornell post office, thought you might need it. I called, I believe, Wayland Troopers Barracks. And at any rate, I get a hold of the investigator that's handling this stolen truck. And I told this investigator, you know, I think my son has something to do with this. And the investigator's like, well, why do you think that? And I said, look, I can't get a hold of him. I need to have him listed as a missing person. There's something going on. He was with his kid. He showed up at my brother's on Friday. And I go through the whole spiel of the grandparents and everything. And then the investigator asks me if I can go to our local police department and look at some photos. And so I said, yep, I can do that. And I left. I went to the police station and my mother went with me. And we walked in there and the town cop there comes out and he has these photos and he lays them down in front of me. And they were still shots of my son and Robbie coming out of a Wegmans in Rochester. And I almost passed out on the floor. I'm like, oh, my God, what is happening? In the next few hours, I figure out the police already believe that my son and Robbie have something to do with a stolen truck. Because there was a credit card in this truck and it was used in a Wegmans and in a like a gas station type of thing. I don't know. They were buying chips and soda. But according to the police, they never had the truck on video. They just had the boys using the credit card.
Monica was doing her best to help the police in their investigation over the stolen truck. But at the same time, she couldn't find her son, and that was her main priority. The police had Nico and Robbie's location at the Wegmans, but beyond that, they didn't have much more to go on, until Monica provided them with some vital information.
I said, you know, Robbie is in Michigan. Well, where in Michigan? They didn't know that Robbie was in Michigan. I told them that. And so apparently, at some point, they get a hold of the grandparents. The grandparents are interviewed. I end up at the police station and I'm just there. I'm at the police station nonstop because I am out of my mind. My kid isn't answering his phone. He's not calling any of us. And that was just not him. If Nico and Nico had been in trouble and when he was in trouble, he always called us. I knew in my gut, there's way more to this. So I'm questioning New York State Police, asking them why, you know, why isn't somebody going to talk to Robbie? And then finally on Wednesday, which would have been the 5th of October, I was told that the Michigan State Police were going to go and pick Robbie up and take him down and talk to him.
Once the police had Robbie, they began to interview him. However, during the interview, Robbie had a breakdown and needed to be transferred to a mental facility.
The next day, I get a phone call that during the interview, Robbie had some kind of breakdown and was transported to a facility. And I mean, I was like, well, what did he say in the interview? Well, he didn't say anything because he had some kind of breakdown. And I'm like, well, why aren't the police asking him what's happening? Why don't they ask him where Nico went? What is his story? Well, they couldn't talk to him because he was in this mental facility. So then a few days later, I believe it was the ninth or the 10th, Sunday night, I believe it was, my sister called me and she said, well, Robbie must be out of the hospital. And I said, how do you know that? And she said, because he's on Facebook. And I don't think they let mental patients use Facebook. And at that time, I did not use Facebook. I had an account that my daughter had set up for me because my friends kept contacting her and saying, hey, are you Monica's daughter? So she set me up a Facebook account, but I didn't know how to use it. But my sister did. She was on it. And so that's how she figured out Robbie was on there. That night, I called the investigator that was handling Nico being gone in the truck and the whole nine yards. I called that investigator at home and I said, Robbie Knight is out of the hospital. Why are the police not questioning him? And I was told that, well, we can't do anything tonight. We'll have to do it in the morning. The next morning, I get a phone call, 6:30 a.m., from my brother-in-law, who's a teacher. The school downtown is in front of Robbie Knight's grandparents' house. So at some point in the middle of the night, the grandparents went to a neighbor an employee at the school. And when my brother-in-law got to school that morning, the other employee went up to my brother-in-law and said, hey, Robbie's grandparents left town. They're on their way to Michigan. Robbie's dead. So my brother-in-law called me that morning to tell me that Robbie was dead. And I called New York State Police again, and I said, Robbie Knight is dead. And they didn't know what I'm talking about. We'll put a call into Michigan. So later that day, I can't remember if I called them. They called me and verified that, yes, indeed, he was dead. They weren't sure if it was an intentional overdose or just a mistake that he made. But apparently there was no suicide note. Nobody said anything about that. So it was just kind of left like, okay, well, now he's died. Nobody went to talk to Robbie's father. Nobody questioned Robbie's brother. To my knowledge, at that time.
With Robbie dead so soon after Nico had gone missing, it brings up a lot of questions. Is it merely a coincidence that the last person known to be with Nico winds up dead of an accidental drug overdose? Or did Robbie intentionally do this to take the secrets of Nico's whereabouts with him? We may never know the answer to those questions. This did not deter Monica at all from hounding the police into looking for her son.
10, 11 days in, and nobody's really gotten in a car and went and searched for my son or, you know, made any initiative to do that. And I was a mess, and I was a real pain in the butt to the police. I wouldn't leave it alone. And during all this time, you have to remember, night, day, I mean, any time, we were calling Nico's phone constantly, all of us in the family were. Some of his friends that were aware that he was gone, they were also trying to get a hold of him. And then we discovered that it was like the day that Robbie died or the day after Robbie died. My sister had called me at work and she told me that Nico's Facebook was gone. I didn't even know Nico had a Facebook. I had never even been on Nico's Facebook. And I'm like, what do you mean it's gone? And she said, it's deactivated. It's totally gone. And so I called the police and told them that. And in my mind, I mean, I'm a mom that's a hairdresser that is going crazy. I'm not a cop. I'm not an investigator. And I'm thinking, well, can't they find out where it was shut down from? Can't they get an IP address? And I mean, I have that just off watching TV shows. And I'm realizing that, no, I mean, things can happen in an hour show. It doesn't really happen in an hour. It takes time for stuff like that to happen. And I throw that out there about an IP address, and I don't really get any response. It's kind of like, if Facebook is gone, he's probably shut it down. You know, he is in a stolen truck, and there was a robbery at the same time that the stolen truck had happened, and they had assumed that Nico was involved in it. The townspeople where I live were all pointing their fingers and It was a horrible ordeal. In the midst of the bad criminal that's on the run, I'm the mother that is feeling like nobody is listening to me. Something is not right here. And eventually, in the days around Robbie's death, I was at my local police station in Addison, and one of the officers there was saying, you know, you can get on your Verizon account and you can look and see what numbers he was calling. It'll list the top 10 numbers and things like that. And I didn't know anything about that. So this officer is sitting there and he's walking me through these steps, and we're trying to get into the account, and we get into it, and he prints the stuff off for me. So then I get on the phone and I'm calling all these phone numbers that he had been calling, and I would leave messages to with the people that I didn't talk to, and like, this is Nico's mom and we haven't heard from him since, you know, the 30th of September, and if anybody knows anything, get a hold of me.
Monica's persistence with calling these numbers would eventually pay off. She got a hold of a boy in Tennessee who claimed to have seen Nico around the time he went missing.
I get a phone call from this boy in Tennessee. My son, Nico, had been in Tennessee and went to school in Franklin in 2009-2010. He went down there to stay with my in-laws for 11th grade. Not something that I was real excited or happy about, but he wanted to change. My two sets of in-laws thought that it would be a good idea and give him a fresh start, and maybe he could get away from the crowd that he was hanging with here, and it'd be good for him. So he ended up going to school there anyway. He started school there in August of 2009 and then ended up back home in February, so he never even finished the year there. So now we jump back to where I was. So this boy from Tennessee calls me, tells me that Nico had been at his house on October 1st and that he had spent the night there. And I said, well, what did he want? I mean, what did he say? Where did he go? How did he get there? And at first, he had told me that he had picked Nico up two blocks from his house. And I said, well, how did he get there? And what do you mean two blocks from his house? Was there a vehicle? Was anybody with him? No, I picked him up and I just brought him back to my house. And I said, well, what was he saying? Oh, well, not much. I couldn't get this kid to talk to me. And I don't know. I'm just thinking, what is happening here? And is this the kid that I was talking to on the phone? I'm envisioning this person's voice and I'm thinking this kid has got to be 6 foot tall, 220 pounds. He's a big kid just from his voice. And I didn't really get anywhere with him. And I'm begging him, you know, if you remember anything, please call me. And if you see him, tell him to call home. And he's okay. And I had called the police, told them that he had called and said that Nico had been to his house. I went to the police station the next day and the investigator called this kid. And the kid said, you know, I don't feel real comfortable talking to you. I don't know who you are. I don't feel real comfortable this conversation. So it was kind of just cut short. And the investigator did say, you know, was there anybody in Franklin that you would trust if I could get a hold of somebody to come over to your house to talk to you? The school resource officer in Franklin, I believe it was contacted, and supposedly this man went to the house and talked to this kid and his family and supposedly got back to New York State Police and said, you know, they just said that Nico was there, that he spent the night, they went to play soccer the next day, and then Nico disappeared. He went back to their house, picked up his stuff, and he left. And again, you know, this is all taking place in October of 2011. In my mind, I mean, I'm like, I don't know anybody in Tennessee, in Franklin, other than my in-laws. And so I'm on the phone with them constantly trying to get kids' names. I had a friend that got online, figured out a way to get Nico's contact list off of his phone. And so she printed it out for me, brought it over to my house. And I sat for hours and hours and hours just calling every single person that was in his contact list and texting people. nobody seemed to know anything. Nobody knew anything. Nobody knew Nico was missing. Nobody knew this. Nobody knew that. I mean, just went on for weeks and weeks and weeks and just really nothing happening. So in December, I received a message via Facebook at that time because, of course, I get on Facebook and I'm figuring out how to run Facebook because people love to run their mouth on Facebook. I get a message from someone that lives in Franklin, and this person was friends with my son. And this person said, you should call so-and-so. This family will help you. They might know something. So I called the number that this person gave me, and I talked to this man, and I talked to his son. And they said, oh, geez, no, we didn't know Nico was missing, and geez, that's too bad, and we're really sorry, and if we hear anything, we'll let you know. And then I got a phone call from someone else that lived in Franklin, and it was a kid that was in his contacts that Nico had went to school with, and that person said, you know, there's a family that lives at such and such an address, and I heard that Nico may have been there. At that point, I tell the New York State Police, and they had called Franklin Police, and Franklin Police were supposed to go there and do a drive-by and talk to the people at the house. And this address was connected to the man and the father that I talked to. And so they're, you know, one and the same. And I'm like, well, I talked to those people and they said that they didn't see Nico, that they didn't even know he was missing, but that this is their address. I'm just totally confused. I'm upset. There's total chaos in my life. I'm trying to still be a wife, trying to be a mother. I've got kids in high school. I've got one in college, and I'm just all over the place every minute trying to work, you know, and it was just taxing. I had people coming to my shop, every customer that I had. What's going on? What's happening? What's new? What are the police saying? What's going on? And this just went on and on. And quite honestly, it went on for years. And it still does go on. I don't mean to make it sound like it stopped because it didn't really stop. It just slowed down a little bit, I guess. So nothing's happening. No one's going to Tennessee. Nobody's doing a thing. So I decided in March of 2012, I'm going to Tennessee. I can't not go there.
While Monica was planning on heading to Tennessee to look for Nico, New York State Police had theories of their own when it came to the investigation, none of which involved harm coming to Nico, which is something the family truly believes has happened to him at this point. The investigators have received many tips over the years as to what could have occurred, but so far, none of them have led to any answers.
I had New York State Police telling me, you know, they believe that Nico's hiding. They believe that Nico's hiding out. He's going to be found. Everything's going to be okay. We're going to find him. There were so many rumors in our hometown and people calling the police station as they're finding out that Nico is gone, people calling in tips, and the investigators would drop what they were doing and they would run and they would investigate and they would figure, you know, talk to this one and talk to that one and this one saying this and this one saying that. And I mean, it was nonstop. And so like about, I'm going to say maybe between year three and year four, I remember the investigator telling me that in our county alone, there were 150 people at one point that had been interviewed in our county in New York with information about Nico or thoughts of what they think happened to Nico or whatever. And some of the stories pretty gruesome. I mean, I had to listen to how my son was put through a manure spreader, and I had to listen to how he was put in a tire on a farm near my house. I mean, in these years, my sister, my friends, acquaintances, people that really didn't even know me would approach me and say, you know, where can we go look? Where can we go look? Because there were no searches ever organized by New York State Police to ever look for him anywhere. There were different periods of time that we got together and we would go walk railroad tracks. We would look at, in, you know, near ponds or party places or under manhole covers. I mean, and it just, it went on and on and on with no support from the police because they didn't believe anything bad had happened to him.
When Monica was preparing to travel to Tennessee back in 2012, she began to send packages containing missing persons posters to the father and son who had claimed to see Nico.
The father had called me the night that I was leaving to go to Franklin, and he wanted to know why I was sending missing posters of my son, and I had written him a letter and told him, you know, I know you guys right now today are the last people to see my son alive, and I want to know what you know, and I'm not going away, and I will involve any and all law enforcement until I know what happened to my son. And I sent several of those packages to their home. And this man calls me and wants to know, why are you sending this stuff to my house? And I said, well, I'm actually on my way to Franklin, so I'd like to see you when I get there tomorrow. Would that be all right? Yep, you sure can. So when I got into Franklin, I picked up my brother-in-law and we went over to the house and they wouldn't answer the door. And my brother-in-law was like, well, maybe they're not home. And I said, they know I'm coming. I'm not leaving. There's 5 cars in the driveway. There's people in that house. I am not leaving. And I'm out there banging on the door. Finally, they let me in. We go in. The father takes us into the living room and there's, I don't know, 10 to 15 people maybe in the back part of the house. And they're all back there talking and they're laughing and a bunch of noise going on. And he said, oh, we're having a family get together kind of party thing, whatever. And I said, well, you know, where's your son? I'd really like to talk to your son. And he said, oh, he's coming. He's getting out of the shower. And I'm standing there in this living room and this boy walks in and I'm like, this is not the kid that I talked to on phone. Who is this kid? Because this kid was, I don't know, 100 pounds, maybe soaking wet, little short stature, looked like a little kid. And he looked like he was dressed up to go to church. And I'm thinking, that is not anybody that my son would be hanging with. My son might have stuck up for him if that kid was getting picked on. But that is not the type of person that Nico would hang out with. So I was kind of lost. So this kid sits down on the couch and I start asking him, you know, what did Nico want when he was calling you? We know he was calling you nonstop on his way down here. And he said, oh, he just called to talk. And the father said, well, Nico helped a lot. Nico came and helped us do driveway. And I said, what do you mean he helped do the driveway? How did he get here? Well, he walked. And I said, well, you said that you went and picked him up. When I talked to you last October, you told me you went and picked Nico up. Now you're saying he walked? Oh, no, he walked. And I believe it was when they had talked to that boy had talked to the police. He had told him that Nico had driven up or got dropped off, one or the other. There were 3 stories anyway, ultimately, that this kid told. And the whole time we're in this house, the boy is giving like one-word answers. He's not really telling me a whole lot, and the father keeps talking to him in Spanish. So, of course, I don't know Spanish, so I have no idea what they're talking about. And the father wanted to be in charge of the conversation. He was not wanting this kid really to share much with me at all. And the father was saying, yeah, Nico laughs a lot. And thinking, no, he does not. So I was just like, something is wrong. And they had told me that they had sent Nico a money order when I was there in 2012. They said, we sent him a money order. And he picked it up. And I said, where did you send a money order to? We sent it to Ohio, and I said, I need a copy of it. I want to see it. Do you have a copy of it? They came up with a copy of this Western Union. And when I left that house, I was on the phone to New York State Police, and I said, look, I just left this house. I've got a receipt, and I've got a copy of this. They gave me the actual original document. It was like a transfer, like you write to a check. I don't know what you would call it, but anyway, it was a duplicate, but it was the original one. And you could see where Nico's name was written on it, and this kid had signed it, and it was for $90. So when I came back home in 2012, I took that over to the New York State Police, and I'm like, now we can find out if Nico was alone, if Nico had that truck. We can find out if Robbie was with him, or I'm thinking all these things, like, this is phenomenal. We have this money order that can be traced, and nothing happened. So for months, I'm like, what's going on with the money order? Like, did you get any information from the money order? And now I realize that when the police do certain things, they aren't going to tell me everything. But at that point, when I bring this home from Franklin in March of 2012, I'm thinking, this is a jackpot, and we're going to find out a lot of information once we figure out where this money order was picked up. But I'm also thinking, how can a money order be picked up? He didn't have any ID. His ID got mailed to my house. So I'm confused about the money order, and I never get an answer about the money order.
Despite the fact that Monica brought this money order to the police, it appears that investigators on the case at the time didn't do anything with it. Years would go by with barely any movement in Nico's case. Then, in 2015, after speaking with three new investigators, she found out that they knew where and when the money order had been picked up, but they couldn't get a hold of any video of the transaction because it wasn't looked into until 4 years after Nico went missing. After finding this out, Monica reached out to the police captain.
It was after that I had called the captain, and I said, look, I'm not messing around anymore, and I'm going to do what I have to do, and I'm going to find out what happened to my kid, and I would hope that, you know, you would be on board with me. The captain assured me that New York State was going to do whatever they had to do to locate my son, and a lot of time had gone by, and apologized, and said, you know, we are on this. We want to find out, too. Then investigator number 6 shows up at my house May 5th of 2016. And we sat here for hours. And he was asking what my concerns were. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I had notebooks and papers and just all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, I have this. I have this. I've talked to these people. I've talked to those people. We look at his Verizon stuff, and I'm not a forensics expert. I'm not a phone expert. All I had was a Verizon report. And back in 2011, you could look at my son's phone, and you could see that the phone traveled to Franklin, Tennessee, back on September 30th and October 1st. And it was there in black and white, and I had all this paperwork, and I'm bringing out all these graphs, and I'm showing all this stuff. And he said, well, I've been looking into this. I've read over some of this stuff, and I'm going to follow the phone. And I had been listening for, you know, at that point, almost 5 years, that, you know, just because the phone traveled doesn't mean that Nico did. And you got to remember, Nico was in trouble. If Nico wanted to stay hidden, Nico could have enrolled this kid from Franklin to help him and say that he was there when he really wasn't, and to throw the police off. And so I am back and forth all these years. One day I'm super sad. The next day I'm super mad. The next day I don't know, is my son alive? I don't think he is, but maybe he could be. Maybe the police are right. And I have half the town saying that he's alive, and my close friends saying, I'm not sure. And then I have other really, really close friends saying, Monica, you know him. He would not do this to you. And so, you know, I'm bouncing back and forth all over the place like a tennis ball. It's like, am I mad at him? Am I supposed to be mourning him? How am I supposed to be acting here? How do I deal with this? And it was just every day I just put my feet on the floor and said, I've got to look for him. I've got to do something. I've got to do something to help this investigation along, because nobody else seems to want to help me. I just felt, even though New York State Police, they were putting in hours and doing things that I wasn't aware of, but to me, Nico was my only case. And I felt he's important enough to me, maybe not to you and maybe not the community, but if he's such a criminal, find him, lock him up, and I would be very happy to go visit him on a Saturday. That was my mentality and the way that I felt about the situation from day one. So investigator number 6, in May, he meets with me, And in July, he and another investigator from New York State are going to Tennessee. And I was just ecstatic. I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't contain myself. I was like, oh my God, finally. I don't want to offend anyone's police work at all, but I will say that I put many, 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 many hours into developing lists of these people that lived in Franklin, reaching out to different entities in Franklin that I knew would help me as a mother. And I had compiled addresses. I had compiled phone numbers. I had compiled parents' names. You know, I had names, addresses, phone numbers of these kids that my son was associated with in Franklin, people that he had went to the movies with, people that he had hung out at Taco Bell with, people that he had gotten in arguments with. And this was all on my own. They had nothing to do with New York State Police doing anything. But I mean, I know that there was work done. But again, I was the mom and I just felt like nobody's doing enough.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished.
The new investigators that were brought in began pulling people from Tennessee in for questioning regarding their knowledge about what happened to Nico. This newfound momentum finally brought new information to the case. Most importantly, they located the truck that Nico and Robbie had stolen.
It was July 21st of 2016. I got a phone call at 7 o'clock at night, and Investigator Hurd said, "Monica, we found the truck." And I was devastated. And it was like right then, somebody had just wiped the floor out from under my feet. And he said that he really felt that this whole thing was not going to end well for my family. I can remember they went down there and they traveled, the New York State Police traveled on a Monday. And that Friday, before they went, my sister and I had lunch with the two investigators that were going on the trip. I said to him, if you find him, make sure that you watch him if you put him in handcuffs, because I've seen him dislocate his shoulder before and he can get his arms out in front of him. So if you find him and you arrest him, be aware of that. And I'm telling this investigator that at lunch on a Friday. He's pretty sure that, you know, Nico probably is down there and he's probably being hidden and he's going to go find him. I remember coming home that night and telling my husband, and he said, I don't want you getting your hopes up. He said, I think that we all have decided we know that something bad has happened to him. And I said, well, I would rather feel like he's coming home in handcuffs than to never come home at all. When I left that lunch, I felt like, good, go find him and bring him back here and put him in jail so that I know where he is. And when he called me and told me that he had found the truck, I knew by the sound of his voice that things were very, very different. And I said, you don't feel the same way that you felt on Friday, do you? And he said, no, I don't. From there, it was just, to me, chaos because I wasn't in Tennessee. I didn't know where they had found the truck, and they would not give me the address to where they found the truck. I couldn't understand that. It's like I am his mother, and I have put all of these years in, and I have been dedicated 120%. This is why this whole family is still surviving, is because we're looking for him and we want answers. And so now I can't know where the truck is. And so then I started reaching out to contacts that I had made over the years in Franklin, and nobody knew. Nobody knew where the truck was. And when the media reported on it, the media had said, and apparently it was in a press release from the police, that the truck was found in a middle Tennessee home. And at one point, one of the news stations had said that it was a middle Tennessee home in Franklin. So I'm wondering, you know, is it at the house that I was at that I visited? Could it be tied to them? Is that why they're not saying anything? They had had a ping on Nico's phone that was on Flintlock Drive in Franklin, and that's where this boy lived that called me, and I went there and I visited them in their home. And I'm thinking, my God, if the truck was in their garage, their neighbors would know. The neighbors would have seen it, you know. Well, I'm putting this stuff together myself, and news crews had went there the day after and questioned some of the neighbors, and the neighbors were like, oh, we have no idea, da, da, da. But you got to remember, all this time, this boy's identity is not out there for the public to know. So nobody knows who this family is. Nobody knows who they are, except for me and the police and them. I have to keep my mouth shut. I can't say anything. I can't put it out there, and it could, you know, jeopardize the investigation. And so I do what I'm told. And whenever there was anything done with the investigation from day one, if I was told not to discuss something with someone, I didn't.
After the truck was found, Monica and the rest of Nico's family thought they would finally receive the answers they'd been longing for. But surprisingly, the case seemed to come to a halt again.
Another year goes by. No one is arrested. Nobody is charged with having stolen property on their property. So the public can't figure it out. I can't figure it out. And so I kind of start raising hell again with the police here. And I'm like, look, it's been a year. I want to know, you know, what happened to my kid? You know, you get down there and you find the truck and then you come home the next day. You know, what is wrong with this picture? So in September of 2017, another trip is planned. New York State Police are going down there again. They're going to start talking to people. They're going to see what they can come up with. They're working with the Franklin Police Department at this point. I said, I'm going down there, and I want to see these people that you're talking to. I want to talk to some of these people you're talking to. And then when we got down there, it was kind of like, no, you know, we're not going to have Monica at the police station. And I don't know if it was better that I didn't, or I don't know. I just always felt like I have been invested in this for so long that I should have the right to be involved in this. I was in Tennessee. They're in Tennessee. I am putting up flyers, and I'm anxious. I want to go to the police station. I want to know what's going on.
Since Monica wasn't allowed to do much while in Tennessee, she did the only thing she could do, and that was to keep Nico in the forefront of people's minds. She began hanging missing posters at the local grocery store. This is when Monica noticed that she was being watched by some unknown men in a truck. She feared they were going to grab her, so she did her best to avoid going near them. But she was still going to hang up the posters. Eventually, she headed back to her car, where she met up with her daughter and a friend, who had also been hanging up posters. When they were leaving the grocery store, Monica noticed that the posters she had just hung up were all taken down.
My daughter and my girlfriend and I were going around and we were putting up posters and whatnot, and we are at a grocery store. And we went to the grocery store and asked if we could put posters up there. The manager said we'd have to call this number and get permission. And so we did that and we got permission to put posters up. We're about our business in this parking lot and putting up posters. And this is in Fieldstone Farms, Publix grocery store complex. We split up in this parking lot and I'm at the front end of it. And as I'm putting these posters up, I can see this truck, and these guys were standing outside this truck and they were watching me. And they weren't in and out of the store or anything. They're in this parking lot and they're watching me, and I know they're watching me, and I'm thinking, I'm going to call my daughter and I'm going to tell her. And I'm like, no, you're crazy. Just stop it. They're not watching you. Just stop it. And I keep putting up my posters. And as I get closer to the area where their truck is, I decide I'm not going near that truck. What if they throw me in that truck? That's all I was thinking. And I'm like, oh my God, not going to quit being paranoid. But I went out around the truck anyway, and I totally avoided that area. Went around, put my last poster up, headed back to the back of the parking lot where my daughter had parked her car. We got in the car, and we drove around where I had just put, I don't know, 30 flyers, and every single one of them were gone. And I said, pull back in there. And we pulled into the parking lot, and I said, take me up to the front of the store. So we went up to the front of the store. I went inside. We were with the management in that store for, I'm going to say, a good 25 to 35 minutes asking, were any employees out there? Did anybody take them down? And so these, there was a couple different managers in different departments there, and they were talking to their people, and no, we didn't do it. They actually had some employees that came out and helped us look in garbage cans to see if there were any remnants of the posters. And there weren't. They were just completely gone from the area that I was putting them up in. The manager there said, you know, if you go to the police department and you make a complaint and they give you a case number, you can come back and you can get the footage from the parking lot. And so that's what we did. We went down to the police station. I made out a report. The detective that was working with New York State Police, they had contacted him in his office, and he said, tell Monica that I'll go down and I will take care of it. I will get the footage from the grocery store.
While waiting to hear back from the officer in regards to the posters, Monica began contacting local organizations for missing people to see what more she could do to help locate her son while she was in Tennessee for a few more days. They suggested that she contact the DA's office, which she did. She was able to speak to an investigator over the phone, but she wanted to talk to him face to face. When she got down there, she was able to speak with the Tennessee investigator. She explained the whole situation regarding Nico and his disappearance, and the fact that the stolen truck had recently been found in Tennessee. The Tennessee investigators wanted to speak to the New York investigators that were searching for Nico to see how they could work together. Monica was able to set up a meeting between the two sets of investigators for the following morning.
So I'm sitting there and I'm listening to them talk back and forth, and you know, New York is saying, you know, this makes this kind of like your jurisdiction. You know, we can't work this case from New York, and this truck was found here in your jurisdiction. This happened, that happened. We're going to need you to hop on board here, you know. So the people from the DA's office are kind of like, well, you know, we could talk about this, talk about that. And at one point during the meeting, I jumped up and I'm like, are you kidding me? What are we doing here? If this kid belonged to any of you in this room, we would not be sitting here discussing this. You need to go and take care of this. and there was something critical in that meeting. And I'm like, you need to be all over this right now. And I walked out of that room. The lead investigator followed me out and he said, Monica, he goes, I understand your frustration. I get it. He said, but we can't work this case from New York. He said, we need Tennessee to help us. And I was just crying and hysterical. And my daughter was with me and she's trying to calm me down. And at this point in time, I also have to say that all those years of all the rumors and all the things that happened, I kept secret from my kids. My kids needed to be kids. My daughter was 15 when her brother left. My son was 19, starting college. They did not know half of what I knew. They didn't even know a quarter of what I knew, because my job was to be their mom and support them if they had a bad day, thinking about their brother. But they, too, were in the position of, yeah, your brother's running. He's going to be caught. And so they're like, you know, they don't know how to feel either. They don't know if something detrimental has happened to him or if, you know, he's really going to pop up here someday. But my daughter was brought up to speed very, very quickly, because that was the first time that I ever allowed her to be in a meeting with the police with me. She was 21 years old when that happened. So it was very hard for the both of us, because she was learning things that she had no idea of that had happened years prior. So she's in the elevator with me and she's trying to calm me down. And I'm like, you know, this is just wrong. This is wrong. And we are going to leave here and nobody is going to be handling this case. I'm going to have no contact. I'm not going to have anyone to talk to, because the people from the DA's office are acting like it's really nothing that they can do. Like, oh, well, you know, you got your stolen vehicle out of New York back. There's, you know, not anything we can do. Let me throw in there that before the September trip, on June 20th of 2017, I received a phone call from an individual from Franklin, Tennessee, that told me that the individual that I'm speaking with had a friend, and this friend described what had happened to my son, who was involved in it. Details of awful, horrible, unimaginable things that were supposedly done to my son. And this person that called me said, you know, I haven't had a crime-free or drug-free life. You know, I've been in trouble myself with the law, but I was not raised to hold this kind of information in. And you are his mother, and you have a right to know what I was told. So in June, I had made another phone call to the captain in the New York State Police and discussed that and the investigators. And I told this individual, I said, please, I need you to go to the Franklin Police Department. I need you to make a statement. I need you to tell them what you just told me. And this person agreed and said that they had already called the Franklin Police Department as well as New York State Police. So New York State Police were aware of what I was learning. Franklin Police were aware of what I was learning. And again, this was June 20th. And so then in September, the end of September, September 21st, is when we're in this meeting with the DA's office. I'm spouting about that. I'm like, what about what this person brought forward? What about this information? I'm learning that there's a map of where pieces of my son are located and nobody's going to go look. Like, what do you do with that? What do you do with that information? And I had to get in my car and I had to drive back to New York because there was nothing I could do. I had no one that wanted to help me. I was emailing the DA's office down there. I had put in phone calls that were unreturned. I'm calling New York constantly. Have you heard anything from Tennessee? Are they going to help? Are they going to do anything?
Monica's trip to Tennessee was in November of 2017. As of the end of 2018, she was still waiting for the New York case file on Nico to be transferred to Tennessee. The Tennessee investigators told Monica outright that they would not communicate with her the way that New York investigators had, and clearly they meant it. According to Monica, she has sent many unanswered emails asking for updates.
To be quite honest, I have had really no information about what is happening with my son's investigation since 2017. So it's a daily struggle, you know, and I stand here and I think, okay, when or how do I involve politics into this? How do I involve politicians? Maybe politicians in Tennessee can help me. Somebody has to help me. Someone in Tennessee has to help me. And I'm assuming that the authorities there are very comfortable with the fact that I'm in New York, because I would be at their doorstep, just like I was New York for, you know, 6 years. But right now, I'm working through those things. I mean, I get a kick and my mind just goes crazy. And it's like, okay, do I contact attorneys? What do I do here? And what do I do to not get myself in trouble and not to jeopardize this investigation? What if the Tennessee authorities are on the cusp of something and I go out and I tell who all these people are, I tell about their families, I tell about everything I've learned about them in the last 7 years? Because right now I'm at a stage of anger. And I mean, I know a lot of people that have missing children, grandfathers and uncles and sisters and brothers. And I got involved with an organization called the Q Center for the Missing, and they're out of Wilmington, North Carolina. And I am close with a number of those people, and many of those people are very forgiving. And some of them have recovered their lost loved ones. Most of them have not. We all have this common bond with each other, and it's a mutual respect of just love and understanding that we all have for each other, because we're all in this world of horrible nightmares. But some of those people are very forgiving. And I sit and I think, I wish I could be like them, because anger makes your blood pressure rise and it can give you headaches and anxiety. And, you know, how can I change my life here? But I'll be honest, I do not have that in me.
For Monica, it's been very frustrating because she feels like her son's case is so close to being solved. They have so much information. They even have the truck, but nothing appears to be happening.
There were three people that I know of that were interviewed that the police strongly feel that they, and one of them actually admitted, that he was involved in decimation of the truck. And yet no one has been arrested. The people where the truck was found, they live in Franklin, but they owned a property in Nashville. The truck was found in the city of Nashville. And these people owned that property and their son lived there. And their son was involved in tearing that truck apart. There was nothing left to that truck except a cab and a box. That was it. That was all. There was nothing left to that truck. And that truck was in that garage. And that family knew it. They knew that it was there. And they have never reached out to me. And they were the people that I talked to. I wasn't in their home. They're the ones that I talked to on the phone. It was a father and a son. Well, when I find out about this address and whatnot, and I know who the property belongs to, the police can't question that boy, because that boy is dead too. So we have all of these dead people that were involved at some point or another and had some bit of information, but none of them can be talked to. But you do have a few of them that are still alive and family members that are alive. But the people that had the stolen truck and their property, their son is deceased, can't talk to him, can't charge him with anything. But what about the parents? Because I'll bet you dollars to a donut that if I had a stolen vehicle in my garage and the police showed up here, I bet I'd be in trouble. But these people weren't. They've never been charged with anything. And I want to know why. And I want to know why that it's just so imperative that I keep their names quiet, because I don't think that it's right. I don't deserve that. My son doesn't deserve that. And all of those people that live in that town deserve to know what their neighbors were involved in. So I guess that's where I stand right now.
Monica knows that her son wasn't perfect, but she still loves and misses him every single day. She will always be honest about the person Nico was, and she will always stand by him.
I can tell you about the good things, the good times about Nico, but I'll never tell you that he was a perfect son, that he was a perfect brother, that he was the perfect child, because he wasn't. None of my kids were perfect at all. Every one of them have an imperfection somewhere and something that they got in trouble for, or I was really mad at them about. Nico had been in trouble with the law. You know, I'll talk about that. But a lot of parents don't. They don't want to admit that their kids have done something that they shouldn't have done or been involved in something that they shouldn't have been involved in. And I don't know. I've always considered myself a protective mother, and I will stand up for my kids if, you know, you're going to hammer on them. I've always felt like if I don't stick up for my kids, I'm supposed to, but not if they're dead wrong. If they're dead wrong, I still might stick up for you, but if you broke the law, you're going to have to face the music. And that was one thing I always used to tell my kids, you know, when they would pick friends or whatever, you ever end up in trouble, you end up in jail, you end up getting arrested, don't call me because I'm not bailing you out, because I didn't raise kids to be that way.
So what happened to Nico Lisi after he stopped at his uncle's house on September 30th, 2011? He told his uncle that he and his friend Robbie were going camping in Buffalo, but clearly that wasn't the truth. He also told his uncle that the truck they had belonged to Robbie's grandfather, when in fact it was stolen. The following day, Robbie was dropped off at his father's house in Michigan. He claimed that Nico dropped him off and stole his belongings, but no one actually saw Nico in Michigan. Later that day, his family had been desperately trying to reach him, and his grandmother got him to answer one of her calls. But he stated that he couldn't talk and would call her back. His family never heard from him again. This same day, Nico's phone pinged in Franklin, Tennessee. Monica's concerns grew when she received Nico's driver's license in the mail on October 3rd. In the days following Nico's disappearance, Robbie died of a drug overdose before being fully interviewed by police. Whatever he may have known, he's taken to the grave. Monica spent years tracking down every lead she could find, and that big break came in 2016 when that truck was found, but the investigation seems to have stalled since that time. There are so many questions in this case. What was the plan when they stole that truck? Why did Nico end up in Tennessee? Is he really the person that dropped Robbie off? Who had a motive to harm Nico? Why hasn't anyone been arrested? Could he still be out there somewhere on the run? Is it possible that he could have gone all of these years without a run-in with the police? We attempted to speak to law enforcement officials for this episode, but the New York State Police told us to contact Tennessee, and they declined to comment. At the time of his disappearance, Nico Lisi was approximately 5 foot 10 inches tall and weighed about 160 pounds. He was last seen wearing a black hoodie and red shorts. He has brown hair and brown eyes. Nico also has a few tattoos, including an unfinished guardian angel with a crescent moon on his rib cage and four Chinese symbols on his upper right arm. If you have any information regarding the whereabouts of Nico Lisi, please contact the New York State Police, Troop E, at 607-776-6866.
I'm never going to see my son again. I'm never going to talk to him again. He's never going to get to see his nephews. In my mind, he's still the 18-year-old kid. And that 18-year-old kid is never going to have a chance to say that he's sorry. He's never going to have a chance to go to that man's house where the truck was stolen and say, you know what? I'm 30 years old today. I'm really sorry about what I did when I was 18. Here, I'll buy you a new truck. He can never go back and try to make anything right again. So my family and Nico himself are left with all of this negativity surrounding him. Because all of these people, as we all grow older, they forget that they were kids once. It's really easy as an adult when you're 30, 40 years old and you're looking at the teenagers that are rotten, mouthy, and talk back and don't listen. And it's really easy to judge those kids. See, people forget about their own past. And that's what bothers me the most. Because my kid is never going to have a chance to make it right. He's never going to have a chance to show people that he could be a great contributor to society. He's never going to have a chance to do that. He's going to have to be on the other side and know that all this negativity is going to surround his name forever. I'm over 7 years in with my son being gone. And when it first happened, I never believed ever that I would ever be standing and talking about him in the past tense. That never would have ever have crossed my mind over 7 years ago. If you would have told me that I would have a missing kid, I would have laughed in your face and said, you're crazy. That doesn't happen where I live. But it happened.
That brings us to the end of episode 179. I'd like to thank Monica for speaking with us. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. You can follow the show on Facebook, where we have a page and a private discussion group. You can find me on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Join me next time. I'll be covering a story from North Carolina. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just 3 simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.